just recapping for some of the new people that are joining us why we decided to do this podcast. We decided that B2B Uncut is something that will serve the B2B ecosystem. We really feel that there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of sensationalism around B2B commerce and digital transformation. And because we come from this field, we hear these questions from a lot of our customers, a lot of our partners, a lot of the developers that we work with. And we just wanted to make a place where we can voice these concerns, talk about it openly, have a discussion around these matters that we all are facing on the day-to-day issues that we are seeing while we work in B2B. So for today's topic, we're going to be discussing data in B2B commerce. Something that a lot of companies are struggling with, as we are learning when we're working with them. There's a lot of systems involved, and all these systems that are involved in production, in packing, and storing, shipping, warehouse management, the order management, et cetera. As we all know, they produce a lot of data. We also need to have data that talks between those systems and updated each system. So that's something that we really want to kind of cover today and figure out how this works, how to approach these type of integrations and make sure that your business is actually ticking well with all the systems that are involved today. And that's what we're going to talk to us to our guest today. But before we do that, there's one more thing that we're going to run just to kind of get a feel on who's joining us today. So we're going to have about, I'll say, 3 to 4 or 5 maybe polls that we're going to run. And right now we're going to run the first one just to understand our audience and just to see who we have here with us joining today. So Anna, maybe we can run the first poll, and here it is. So are you experienced or advanced? What's your experience? What are you new? Are you experienced? Are you advanced in data workflows? And if you can all take a second to kind of answer that, that'll be great. And we'll review the answers momentarily. With that, I would like to introduce our guest today. And we have two people that we actually work with at Oro. And our first one is Joe Albrecht. If Joe, if you can introduce yourself, I'll be happy.
Yeah, certainly. Thank you, Yoav. My name is Joe Albrecht, Managing Partner and CEO of Xngage. We are a B2B e-commerce implementation services firm.
Thank you, Joe. And our second guest, the guest from Makenio, Ali Hanyalolu. Sorry, I've massacred your name. I've practiced it so many times, but if you can, please introduce yourself, Ali.
Absolutely, Yoav. And by the way, you did a good job. So I'm Ali Hanyalolu. I am Senior Director of Product Marketing at Akinio. I'm based actually out of a Boston office, but I'm originally from London, England, as you can tell by my accent. I've been at Akinio for 2 years now, but I've been in the commerce and SaaS technology space for a lot longer than that at many different companies. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Yoav, for having us.
Thank you, Ali. So maybe again, let's just use this poll thing and just run one more quick poll. If Anna, you can run the second poll quickly. All right, so is data syndication seen as a strategically important at your company? So just to understand if people here are actually interested in this. And we'll get the results to you as well. So with that, let's jump in, start the discussion here, and just get the conversation started. So the first topic that we want to kind of cover is why do data syndication and standardization matter? And I think that's something that is interesting to a lot of people. And we definitely have two companies here that have a lot to do with data and integration. So guys, the floor is yours.
Sure, I'll take that one first. So why do they matter? I think they matter because there's something else that matters even more than that, that is impacted if you don't pay attention to these two. And that's the expectations that customers have of B2B organizations that they're working with respect to the data about their products, their company, their brand, and so on, that they use to make decisions. By not taking into account how customers are finding out about you and getting to know what you offer, and not being consistent or even correct about the information that you provide to them to help them make a decision to do business with you, is not only just going to be a sort of a bad experience, they will actually abandon. And I don't just mean abandon buying from you, they can actually abandon your brand. And so that's why these matter. Getting these things right is going to have downstream impacts on your ability to grow as a business.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Ali. And I can offer the perspective, I guess, of our clients. We work with a lot of distributors. And obviously, data is key to selling, to providing great experiences for customers in B2B. It starts with research, and it continues on with decision-making, as you pointed out. And then obviously, a whole lot also about the sale, right? In B2B, you have complex product data. But I want to get to the heart of the question, which is about syndication and standardization. I think that's really an important piece that the industry has not yet really fully captured, right? There is a lot of standardization in software development. There is standards in certain industries, in business. There's EBXML, there's EDI, and these are all standards to basically make processes more efficient. I think there's a lot of efficiency to be gained in the topic of specifically product data standardization and harmonization, because I see those struggles all over every time with every single client. The question is, do we have the data? If not, where do we get it? And then when the question comes, or when that's answered and we are getting it from sources, then the data comes in all formats and shapes, right? Some industries have already achieved standardization, like automotive. There's PIES and SEMA. Other industries, they still lacking a bit in terms of standardization. So I think the more standardization will be achieved in the verticals, the better and more efficient our clients, and so for hopefully some of the folks who are on the call, can manage this very, very significant data challenge.
Yeah, Joe, you're absolutely right with that respect to standardization. There is standardization, if you will, across an industry or a particular segment that is there to help those businesses be more efficient and accurate with what they're doing. But there's also the standardization that you do within your organization as you work with that data, so that you are being more efficient when it comes to working with that information. That information that you're being provided in a standard format is a starting point for you. It is not the finished product. And the way you differentiate yourself in the market, the way that you help your buyers be able to make informed decisions with you and actually get the right products so that they're not returning them to you or anything, is through and working efficiently in expanding on that information, that core technical information that's provided to you, and providing additional information that they need. And doing that in an efficient way. You don't want to be duplicating things. You don't want to be creating redundancy. And you want to ensure that you are still applying governance in terms of the information that gets created so that incorrect or incomplete information doesn't slip through. Standardization is a really important thing that you do within your company as well.
Right. And I think also to your point, then it depends. The perspective I shared is probably more the one of a distributor that gets a lot of data or has to source it from different suppliers. A manufacturer has the opposite, has exactly what you're saying, right? And I think as both are looking to do more of that standardization and synchronization and sharing and interchange of data becomes more swift, more easy, actually less costly. And then what you're talking about is internally having a standard approach to product data management. That's when, you know, yes, I see a lot of folks really adopt tools also to help with that and to create sort of that single version of the truth, right? That's a nice big word, but to enrich then and build out maybe the content to ultimately also actually again set themselves apart, right? If everyone has the same data, it's not going to be very, very unique to your business. So what you're talking about is actually standardizing how you internally manage it, but then creating an enrichment that is unique for maybe your company, maybe within your industry, maybe it's just very, very unique. Look what Nike is doing in terms of how they engage and standardize on content, but also they differentiate in the market, right? So, yeah.
Yep.
You're off.
And yep. And with that, thank you for that discussion. But what kind of systems do you usually see? What the kind of data sources do you see in like big projects? I know, Ali, you're presenting more a PIM solution right now. Joe, you probably are sitting kind of in the middle when you're helping your customers build these projects. But what would you see, or what would you kind of list as systems that you have to kind of integrate between and have data moving back and forth between?
Yeah, maybe Ali, if I can jump first.
Please do.
Working with lots of clients, it depends what type of data we're talking about, right? So if we want to quickly stay with product data, obviously the systems that folks are adopting to standardize our PIM systems, and Ali can talk much more on PIM, Akinio, of course, is one great example. When it comes to sourcing that data, more on the distribution side, there is actually third parties in the ecosystem that their business model is to aggregate, source, and enrich data, product data, to then provide it to the various members within the community, right? For instance, one I can maybe talk about quickly is ADE Content Services or the Ideal Connector. This is data that's being provided. And these are very, very important sources that we see frequently. When it comes to other data, obviously the systems are different, right? There you're dealing more with ERP systems for order, customer master. You're dealing with CRM systems, maybe with order management systems, et cetera, as we venture away from product data.
Yeah, those are two great. That's actually a very interesting example that you brought up, Joe, that maybe many people don't consider. We actually have a customer of ours who provides that exact service, which is providing product catalogs to those in manufacturing, food service industry, and so on. But in terms of other systems that we see, like you said, there's all different types of data. You could even ask, like, what do you mean by product data? There's all different types that can be considered there. So we primarily see outside of the PIM world, I won't go there, then I'll just seem biased, but also a lot of information both starts and ends in systems like ERP, PLM, of course, as well, product lifecycle management, definitely on the manufacturing side. And believe it or not, we still see spreadsheets out there. A lot of data sitting in spreadsheets and PDF files. It's still out there.
And web pages, right?
And web pages.
We see a lot of product data being aggregated in WordPress web pages, and then
All right.
So part of the challenge that our audience has, and working with experts like these you've had today, is how do you remove the silos of all those different systems of information? That's the challenge and what needs to be addressed first, so that you can then actually standardize and therefore more easily syndicate the information.
All right, thank you. And again, to our audience, I'm reminding this is a discussion, a conversation. Please feel free to join, ask questions in live from our panelists. We would definitely encourage that. Simply unmute yourself and talk, or ask in the Q&A, or if you're again on LinkedIn joining us, please just type your questions and our marketing team will promote it to our discussion here. We are getting first results from our two polls. First of all, about are you new, experienced, or advanced in using data workflows? So we have about 64% of our audience right now that are pretty new. We have a tie between experience and advanced, about 18% each. So again, we have people that need to learn about it. So that's a good, and thank you for joining us. In terms of if data management is strategically important for your company, we've got 100% that yes, it is. So again, we have the right audience here. So again, making sure that we have the right audience. So again, please ask your questions. So with that, let's move on. And I guess that the big, you know, kind of question that a lot of our customers ask us, and I'm sure you're hearing it a lot, is so when do we actually have to start thinking about this, right? How do we synchronize data? How do we manage data? When is the right time to start thinking about it when we are going into digitizing our business or going for a new project? So I know my thoughts about it, but being a moderator, I really want to hear your side of the story about this and how you think about that.
Joe, I'm going to defer to you, as you and your team are the experts on implementing these technologies. What would you advise your customers?
I mean, depends a bit where you start this question, right? Product data, for instance, being a key asset, it's actually the absolute important asset to do anything online in terms of selling online or even supporting research processes online for customers. So it's yesterday. That's the answer, right? Because it's such a big, messy situation. At least I say this based on, you know, having had over, 50 clients product data availability, just even having product data is a huge struggle often, okay? And again, this is more on the distribution side. As a manufacturer, you probably have not that struggle. But so I think it's the answer is yesterday. And then the question is, you know, if you are asking this more specifically in the context of a project and initiative, let's assume it's, of course, like an e-commerce sort of project. You know, I think as early as possible is the answer there. Why? Because the product data informs a lot of the dependent processes, such as the user experience, right? Without understanding your data, you cannot decide and design the most suitable sell page. Because if you don't know if your products are flat SKUs, an item is the thing, you add it to the cart, you're done, or it's more complex where you're choosing based on attributes and facets or options, right? Or maybe even configurations. If you don't have the answers for that, then how can you optimize the experience? That's one big piece why product data early on matters. The other is very technical. You need to get this product data early into the systems so that the experience can be built out and that the integrations can be built out. And of course, if you work with a PIM platform, right, then you have a leg up there. You still need to typically connect the PIM system. Some platforms have connectors. I know obviously you guys have connectors, but still there is work to be done. And product data is a strong dependency on the success of the project.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agree. And I mean, I know the analysts that we talk to also agree and make this recommendation to their clients that they speak to. You know, when not to do this, start thinking about managing your data. When you finished your replatforming or digital transformation effort, it's not something you do afterwards. Don't get that technology in place and then say, okay, now let's clean up the data. Now we can see it in that user experience. We'll clean it up afterwards. No, that's garbage in, garbage out. The recommendation is do it before you make those big investments in not just the technology, but your people and the resources and the time. And it's been proven to actually, if you get your data sorted out first, your actual digital transformation or replatforming effort will go faster because everything is as expected. And as Joe correctly said, it's not just out to your e-commerce platform and check you're done. There are so many other systems that will be dependent on that. The other reason to get it done at that before you fully finish out your replatforming or transformation is you'll be ready for when this needs to happen again, which will inevitably, as we saw in the last 2 years, unexpectedly, that will happen again. You'll be ready for making that particular transformation as necessary.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. One more kind of comment on it. When does it stop, maybe related question you have, but I don't think there is really when it stops. And the reason for that is because the usage scenarios are changing and evolving. Customers mm-hmm. demand increasingly different data points from the sell side. And, you know, in the past, it was great if you had a PDP and there was a picture. Today, that's not cutting it. You have to have spec sheets, collateral, key information that drives decision making. We're going to enter the 3D world now, the mixed reality world. You need models, you need assets that go with that data. So you constantly have to look at your product data, in my opinion.
And do you think it's only limited to product data, or do you think the strategy, I know, again, Ali, you're presenting a PM, but I think this is even becoming a bigger problem when we start adding other pieces of data and having strategy about that. I know a lot of this actually drives a lot of the processes and business processes of a company in the end. So I think, again, I agree with you. Yesterday is a good answer. I think the week before yesterday was probably a better answer to when we should start thinking about it. But I completely agree with you. And just wanting to kind of make sure that we also talk about other kind of data sources, I mean, or data in the company at all. I really think it drives not only the, and I'm agreeing with you, of course, that it doesn't only drive a specific part of the company. It really changes a lot of what the company is trying to do or is trying to do, let me say that, and representing all the parts of the company that are involved in this project. So,
yep.
Okay, so let's say we convinced our audience to start thinking about it yesterday or the week before, but how do we start going about it? It seems very, very messy in terms of what we need to think about, how much we have to consider, how many moving parts we have. So what would be kind of a strategy to kind of learn and where we can actually start this process in a company?
Joe?
I think it depends really, or it starts with the use cases and understanding what you want to achieve, right? So if you are a distributor selling 2 million SKUs, is your goal to necessarily manually enrich your data? Probably not. What your goal would be is to ensure that you have as much of a data set that's complete, consistent, and cleansed to support 2 million SKUs on a cell, on a cell page or experience or whatnot. So then your challenges are all about sourcing that data and standardizing that data, where we go back to the first point of the discussion here. How do you start to manage the strategy? I really believe by when you identify that you need to take care of your product data and you enrichment is your use case, and maybe that's that time and you look at PIM platforms, in my opinion, you still want the use cases to guide you in that journey mm-hmm. of finding the right PIM, because some PIMs are really strong with enrichments, others are strong with the syndication, others are strong with asset management, and then some are really strong on the inbound side. So depending on where you are in that chain of how the product data is used, whether you're the creator on the manufacturing side or the consumer on the distribution side, your use cases will be weighted differently, right? And I think that can be a good guide to help you with the process. And then it's not just about the technology, it's really building a team around it. I would call it a data discipline in-house, maybe a data wrangler. I have heard that term with some clients, or yeah, the team that is truly there to solve that data challenge.
I like that term wrangler. I'm going to use that one. I'll be a marketing wrangler with my team. I see it being on two dimensions you need to be looking at, and a very similar philosophy that Joe just shared, which is all around how do you define the strategy that you're going to take, and that's where you start. And I see two dimensions. One is, think about it in terms of scope, and scope for how the data is going to be used. That could be, for example, you're a multinational business. You sell in different countries. So is your data structure so complicated that you're trying to account for every different language and every different nuance And therefore, making how you structure your products with their attributes overly complex, and instead looking at things like locales, whereby you only have one description, but it has different locales supporting it. That makes things more efficient for you. Or maybe it's in terms of you actually want to grow with adding more channels to how you market and sell. We're seeing this more and more in B2B and starting to embrace some things may have been considered B2C, but it's not just, oh, we've got an e-commerce site and then a direct field sales team. They are looking at more and more and saying, well, actually, we want to get on marketplaces. We want to sell through partnerships. We actually want to start marketing even through social media in a B2B context. These will become part of the scope and defining the strategy you take of where to start and how you're structuring your catalog. The other dimension is more around your goals and KPIs. So identifying upfront things like what to identify why you're doing this. And it could be things in case of, we just need to get products to market faster. It's taking too long and we're losing business as a result. So what do we need to do, not just from our data perspective, but to Joe's perfect point, which is what people and process do we need to be able to put into place to support getting those products to market faster? Maybe you want to sell more products. Maybe you're acquiring brands. We see this a lot. And so you need to be able to make sure that as you acquire new brands into what you offer, that the migration over to a single catalog becomes easier if that's your goal and direction. The list goes on. But define those two things first will then determine the strategy you're going to take with respect to managing, standardizing, and then syndicating your data.
All right. Thank you very much. Again, audience, you're welcome to participate, ask questions. Just a reminder. So after kind of understanding, you know, how to start data management strategy, et cetera, from your experience, guys, who do you think is that has to own this process? Who's kind of, what's a successful way of having multiple owners? Again, that integration can touch every part of the company, but what role you think is going to make this successful in having them own that whole process? If you have, and again, just calling for your experience and understanding, what have you seen? What was successful? What was not so successful in having a single owner, multiple owners, et cetera?
I'll take that one first because it segues on from what I've just said. Remember those two dimensions I mentioned? I would say, I don't like to use the word own because I think everybody has an ownership in this, but who's going to lead it and drive it is the ones who are accountable for those two dimensions that I talked about, whether it's your scope and what you're doing there in terms of growth or your particular business objectives. That's who could initiate or drive this particular process. In many cases, we typically see that more on the line of business or marketing side. In the past, it may have been more IT, but what we're seeing is actually it's both. There needs to be a partnership here between the business and the IT side in order for it to be successful. And what we typically see is that we'll have a lead from one of those two roles, but they partner closely with their counterpart and take their needs into account in order to drive success for the project. That's what we typically see from the PIM side of things.
Yeah, no, I think there's not much to add to what Ali explained. Maybe just that I think, again, depends how we're asking this question or what process we're referring to, but data is important. So that should be backed by leadership, right? Who is ultimately responsible to make sure data is an important topic. Data is a currency nowadays, right? Whether we talk now about product data or other data in the organization, but product data alone, it's an asset. It's the IP of an organization. Without that data in a digital world, it's going to be very hard to succeed. So mm-hmm. I think it's a leadership topic. When we talk specifically about synchronization and syndication standardization, I think, yeah, the idea of a product data wrangler or team of excellence center of excellence that is cross-functional, to Ali's point, absolutely, right? Cross-functional because just take product data on a website. If it's just technical data, nobody will be able to buy based on it. But if it's not technical and only marketing, it will never work for the real use cases that the customers out there have. So you have to have the rich, attribute heavy, very detailed product data sets that typically product data managers own and maybe come out of a PLM and what have you, the ERP. But you need the marketing side of it. You need the document side of it. So it's really a cross-functional topic. Assets, the creation of assets, imagery is a topic. So potentially work even with other partners that create imagery and go through your warehouse. And you know, I've seen that happen. Literally coming in with a camera that snaps the imagery 360. Depends really the answer here, but yeah.
Yeah, Joe, what is it they say? Data is the new oil. Is that what they say, I think? Although I say, yeah, I agree with you. We are in an experience economy and data is the currency.
Yep, I agree with that one. And so I know, again, when we start these processes, we start doing data integration. And there's a lot of times where we see that many of the systems that are involved actually generate the same data, right? Or same data that can be regarded as duplicate or stuff like that. And there's this term that comes up a lot in integration, source of truth, meaning which system is actually responsible to make sure that a customer name is a customer name or a SKU number is an SKU number, et cetera. So the source of truth kind of term comes a lot, at least in my experience, in these integrations. And we see many, many different systems that can be sources of truth in companies. Again, from my experience, depending from what side of the project we come, we are, and what actually system the customer might have, those systems might be the source of truth for the data. And with that, there's always the question of how do we decide, how do we define what is the system or the source of truth that we should kind of refer to? And that's something that we've heard many times in our integrations. And I would like to see from your experience, how do we define what should be the source of truth for pieces of data in the in this kind of big process that we're working on? And does it have to be a single source of truth? Meaning for the customer data, can it be one system? For the product data, can it be another system? Or we have to have one single system that you think should be the source of truth for all data?
Well, I'm biased, so I'm going to say PIM. Thank you very much, everybody.
All customer information, order information, everything should go in a
I should leave now.
Thanks for coming, everybody.
Me too, Joe. Yeah, the Ali show right now.
Nobody creates a source of truth or a system of record, as it's sometimes called, for the sake of creating a single source of truth or a system of record. That's like, it doesn't, there's no such thing. You know, it's not like, hey, we got everything all together in one place. Check, we're done. No. It could be in a number of places. And the way I tend to look at things from both a business and architecture perspective is, how is this information going to be used? Therefore, what are the other systems that are going to be leveraging it, as well as what is going to be measured in terms of its impact? And therefore, almost kind of work backwards to what technology makes sense that is going to be able to leverage that information as dare I say, easily, as seamlessly as possible without having to jump through massive hurdles. We have customers who do use PIM as a source of truth for their product data. Yes. Interestingly enough, we also have some customers, though, it doesn't end there. Some cases, they use PIM as a means to collect all the information and enrich it as necessary, but then it ultimately actually gets pushed back to their ERP, for example. They may still use other systems to call from the PIM, but the corporate source of truth for that product data actually lives in a different technology and it's been pushed out and stored there. So you can see the difference, right? It really does depend on how you want to best leverage that data and what makes sense for your organization.
Yeah, I really don't know what else to add there other than that's probably why we exist as a services partner. Every implementation we have those are the discussions, right? Those are the reasons. What you just explained is the reason why we exist or why there is an implementation. Because you can't just say, oh, I have a centralized PIM and this is the version of the truth, right? Because the e-commerce platform comes along and can offer certain things that maybe the PIM also could do. Product relationships, merchandising associations are a great example. Are you managing your cross-sells in the PIM or in the e-com platform, right? There's a lot of overlap in some of these areas and you can't just, you have to decide it. That's what I'm trying to say. You have to make decisions.
Yes.
And you have to then configure and build processes around those decisions. So your data might be flowing, like you're saying, into the PIM. That's the centralized place to aggregate it, to enrich it. But then how do we quote? Well, where is quoting happening? Well, maybe in the ERP. Well, we need that data in the ERP, but the ERP cannot hold it. So right now you have a whole mess on your hands, but that's exactly what an implementation goes through.
Yes, exactly. So everybody who's watching live right now or watching the recording, go to, I'm pointing this way because Joe's next to me on this side. talk to Joe, his team and his peers, because they're the ones who have the expertise in determining what makes sense for your business goals.
Thank you, Ali. The check is on its way.
Thank you. Great. I accept Venmo, PayPal as well.
and I completely agree, I guess, with both of what you were saying, that it's not an easy answer. The source of truth is something that's evolving, revolving, and can be on different parts of the project, different system. So yeah, I think that's definitely a complex one that a lot of people are expecting a very simple answer, and I don't think that one exists. No, let's say we've discovered everything. We now know what the sources of truth are, where we want data to go, where what needs to be updated. Have you ever experienced or came to projects where it went wrong, where there was bad data or bad data integration? I'd love to hear your horror stories, see what your experience taught you. I have some nightmares that I can share, but again, this is your platform here. I would really love to hear some bad stories or what we should basically learn from those experiences and say, you know, this is so important that if it went wrong, this is really bad. But of course, that's what we should avoid. But I think that will make it a bit more relatable to a lot of people if they hear some bad stories that happen to other companies in other projects. And I think we can share some of that here.
Yeah. And I won't mention any names to protect the innocent.
Of course, no names.
No names, nothing. No, exactly. But one that I've talked about before was the case of what we saw online, whereby some pet food, some dog food in this case, that was being told in both a B2B and B2C scenario. So they were both actually. The product description page for this had the dog food labeled as both adult and puppy food. Now, I'm no vet, and if you're not a pet owner, maybe you're not aware of this, but I am a dog owner. It is very dangerous to give an adult dog puppy food. And so this was one thing that we had caught, and thankfully it's been corrected, of course, but this was a case whereby because standardization or any governance or anything like that was not being put in place, mistakes like this can slip through. And it's more than just looking bad on the brand for, you know, not being clear with their information. There are clearly both health and legal, potential legal implications of that particular scenario coming up. And the thing is that if this slips through, it could very easily get through to other channels without being realizing. And sometimes they can be hard to correct. So that's one particular example I share where it seems like a small detail could have big implications.
Yoav, how much time you have for your podcast today?
Well, we're hoping to finish before the end of the day, but please give us some of the highlights, some of the nightmarish experiences you had.
Oh, bad data. The tricky thing is sometimes just a little bit of bad data can really cause trouble, right? Just let's just say about, because the topic is standardization and synchronization. So different ways to express unit of measure, right? I'm not talking millimeters versus inches and things like that. I'm talking, are you saying inch, double quotations, or IN, right? What is the term that's coming in? That alone can cause headaches, because when the integration process is run, you have to get to a standard. The values could be different. They could be expressed in different units. Again, the values of a particular object. And then you have bigger issues where data is plainly wrong. I have seen one example I can give, and we will not name anything. I have seen folks pump in product data, and it turned out that the titles of the products had credit card numbers in them. So that's when you wave the red flag. And then also just bad data. Bad data is very common. Just I don't mean it bad as in this disruptive bad, but either gaps in data or simply very abbreviated data that nobody understands other than maybe the sales rep that has sold this thing for years, right? So it's all over the place. And bad data is actually the reason why there's a ton of churn in many of the implementation efforts and in this topic of integrating systems and having data flow. Bad data is your enemy.
Yeah. And then one of the biggest sort of business impact risks that you have with bad data is an increase in returns of the product that I bought, that's bought. And that is a very costly proposition. I remember there was a number that said, like, it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars are spent each year or just on returning stuff.
Absolutely. And there's this company is trying to solve that issue, which means that it is a big issue right now. So yeah, returns and bad data can kill you. But again, in this podcast, we're all about positive. So I would love to hear some good stories. Let's say, what would be a case where you did come to a company and maybe from your experience, you helped them really succeed in this, maybe optimize some of their efficiency. I mean, made them, more optimized or efficient in their processes. Some good stories so we don't all think it's all bad when it comes to data.
Joe, would you like to go first on that one?
Ali, I let you go. But
I'll go first.
Sure, all right, I'm sure there is no issues when you use the PIM.
It's all good.
Always good.
this is a story I do like to share given the last 2 years. And sort of very quickly on this one. One of our customers is Socomore. If you're not familiar with Socomore, they're based in France. They're in the business of providing cleaning goods and services to the airline industry. And of course, when the first lockdown happened, when the pandemic hit, no airline industry. And this company could have gone bankrupt overnight because of it. They actually decided to pivot very quickly. And what they did was they took their existing facilities and services and started providing sanitization gel or to local hospitals and other medical facilities who needed them. So they were able to have a business there, but word got around that they were providing sanitization gel when it was very hard to get hold of. And they actually not only pivoted to a different industry, they actually pivoted to B2C. So they actually started selling to local stores and then to consumers as well through their website. A complete pivot that actually helped them survive and continue to sustain their business through the pandemic. And they have credited a PIM, obviously a Kenio PIM in this case, in having their data in order already. They were prepared to make that pivot because they had all the information about their products and what they do ready to go. It was easier and faster for them to be able to pivot to a whole new business model, to a different audience, rather than having to wait to recreate all of the information all over again. So that's one happy story that I do like to share.
So any recollections on a success story? Oh, I know you have a lot of good stories, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, yes, there's lots of good stories. I think I don't have a great story right now readily available to share, but I guess I'm trying to see good data management is so foundational that I think when we are engaged with clients and we do our discovery process, we look for that. We're trying to really understand what the data situation is. And I'm now not just talking product data, but in general. And then we're looking for the quality of the data, the availability of the data, and then can it be accessed? Can it be made available through APIs, through processes? What processes exist, right? So sometimes you get into organizations, sure, we have already a middleware layer, we have it all, and then you come and this is a file system that's slow and absolutely inadequate to build a solid solution, right? So the success story is in, yes, we have been fortunate enough to work with a lot of clients where they are really on top. I think where the topic data is at the forefront. And again, that goes back to the earlier comment. It's part of what leadership focus on. And it through the organization, it's clear that data management is critical. And those are the organizations you can walk in and be much more efficient in implementing projects. The flip side is that those where the data management discipline is not as mature, you will encounter delays. There is no going around, no matter how beautiful you want to make your little proposal and put a 3-month timeline together, it will not happen.
All right, thank you. And so we are kind of pushing to the top of the hour. We have a few more topics. Again, audience, if there's any questions or any stories from your end, we'd love to hear them. So what are other use cases that data management is crucial for and can save a lot of time and resources? Any examples of, I'll give a quick example that we learned. One of our customers, a big distributor in the US, we went to their, trade show, and we saw that their customers were coming and ordering from books and then filling in manually orders on the order sheets. And then somebody had to key it in. And then depend who got the sheet to key it in, it went to different ERPs because they through acquisition had multiple ERPs. And that became like a big, big problem. So we actually, all we did was create a funnel where all the data comes in from and then it gets distributed to the right place. I think that was an easy way. So what kind of other use cases you saw where kind of good data synchronization and management was crucial for a business and actually helped that? Some examples or use cases that you kind of built?
Joe? Sorry. Can you go first, Ali?
Yeah, sure. I'm just trying to think of one that I haven't mentioned already when, thinking about saving time and resources. You know, we talked about pivoting business models. We've talked about replatforming. And digital transformation is another example. I'm just trying to think of another one here. I think I answered this question ahead of time. Because there's a lot of time and resources. Getting new products to market, I touched on as well. I gave an example whereby whether it's a manufacturer or even a distributor is bringing on a new brand or a new line of products. Again, getting the data governance and organization as part of the management of it in order first will make those particular projects and initiatives go faster and minimize the amount of resources that are needed to bring on that new brand or product line, which in and of itself can be a huge project. Those are probably the main ones that I come across.
Joaf, it took a little bit, but now the CPU is running. Something else, some other aspect of this question, maybe in a slightly variation here of what you said. I think an area where good data management and again the focus on data has been very beneficial, and I see lots of successes when folks launch their web properties, when they go through digital transformation and they go live, and there is this expectation that now we have an e-commerce channel. Right, now the orders are flying in the door, but no, Why? And then what can we do to actually get that lift in acquisition that we were hoping for? If you don't have a data mindset and a data focus to even measure how the web property is performing, you will have a hard time making the necessary changes and coming up with the necessary strategies to create that lift on the acquisition side. You might be still doing good on the adoption side, getting customers that you already have, you have relationships with over years to channel shift adopt the web platform and sort of become beneficiaries of your digital transformation journey. But if you want to really write the acquisition story and penetrate new markets and all this without data discipline internally and the focus on it, it's going to be very difficult. So I've seen a lot of success stories where mature clients did a lot of that monitoring and measuring and actually daily could tell in the analytic systems that they had to their disposal, right? They could tell what are the top selling SKUs, what are the categories that are purchased the most frequently by certain customer segments. And these are things that are important. And then not last component of that story that I'm talking about is SEO and analytics data. Sorry if I went down in a...
No. Engine. I think that's I wanted to see when, for example, we marry, you know, all this kind of old school kind of integration of data and all that to actually what we are trying to do is move a lot of these businesses to digital. And I think a lot of stuff that they don't think about is connecting, for example, the marketing with other parts of the system, because they're only thinking about the catalogs or stuff like that. But SEO, and that's important, right? And making sure that that data funnels through correctly to the right channels. That's great. So the big question, I guess, that we're going to end with is, why is data and content important in merchandising for B2B today? I know B2B is kind of trailing B2C world, but is it important? Why is it important today to the B2B kind of space?
It's funnily enough, it's the same reasons that apply to the B2C space as well. And it's the same in B2B. It's no different here. Merchandising in this case needs to be correct, first of all. We do see examples both in B2B and B2C where there is some evidence of merchandising going on the e-commerce site, and it's like, what do these products have in common? So there's the correctness, there's the relevancy as well. Today, many of the technologies that are driving e-merchandising, including things like searchandising, have to be relevant to those who are coming in order for you to, essentially the reason we have merchandising is to grow average orders and grow deal sizes and get more business. That's another area, but it's the topic that was just mentioned before as well. We want to make sure that the strategies we're taking with our data are having an impact on our business. Otherwise, why are we doing them? And the way you do that is through analytics and the insights that come back. Merchandising is a means to be able to get some of those insights and analytics come back into your business in order to determine how you refine your strategy when it comes to data and what you do with it. And so in order for all of those three things to be effective, the data, the content, and that includes the performance data as well within that, are absolutely key to get right to ensure that those three other things are working as expected.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ali. Joe, anything to add?
No, yeah. I just, in B2B, I think specifically to just everything Ali said, yes, specifically for research and decision-making, data is key on a B2B e-commerce solution, right? But I think what's more important than the data itself is the relationships. And well, the relationships depend also on the data. So if you have the right, if you don't have attributes, if you don't have facets, if you don't have spec sheets to relate products with each other, in B2B it's going to be a problem. In B2B, often customers are not just buying a product to satisfy some personal need. Of course, they buy products that need to be fit into a process, whether it's being manufacturing process, construction process, what have you. So they need to find the right thing. And that's a complex discussion. That's why sales reps exist. Well, you can't put a sales rep on the website, right? So if you want to sell without the sales rep being actively talking to you on the website, you have to have a lot of that data that creates, that helps you a solution.
Spot on.
All right. So again, I'm going to offer the audience for the last time to participate. If not, this experiment actually worked very well. It's something to give the power of speech to people, and they choose not to use it.
it's okay if you don't want to. We understand.
Yeah, we understand, and I think you gave a good overview of everything. So with that, I think we kind of ran out of topics to discuss here, but I wanted to thank you both, Ali and Joe, for participating in this episode. Hopefully, you got to say and participate on some of the topics that you are seeing in the day-to-day work that you do every day. So again, I think that's something that is important. Data is going to make or break any project, any digitization of a company today. So I really appreciate your time today. And to everybody else, thank you for joining us. Ali and Joe, thank you very much for spending your evening, morning with us. And for everybody that participated, thank you very much. And see you next time on B2B Uncut.
Thanks, everyone.
I appreciate it.